All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Samesh. I'm a consultant with Microsoft Services based out of Canberra. I'm an infrastructure consultant, and I specialize in deployment. I know I'm standing between you and having a break for the rest of the evening, so I'll try and make this as painless as possible. A bit about myself. So infrastructure consultant. I'm also part of the Deployment Guys. Our blog URL is on there. Have a look. We tend to publish good snippets that we experience with our customers, that we think of other solutions that we can provide to our customers on a public forum. So today, I want to talk a bit about MedV2, just to kind of get an understanding. How many of you actually know about MedV? How many of you are using MedV1? Okay, so MedV2, mostly a complete rewrite for a large part of it. It came to us through an acquisition of a company called Kidaro a few years ago, and V1 was effectively that same product with a bit more code behind it. V2 is a significantly different beast and does not have a client-server architecture. So that's one of the big selling points of MedV2 and how it can help you in your deployment. So I had to think about how we do the agenda, because what I want to try and do is level set on how MedV2 works, what its architecture is, the process you need to go through, and how you actually deploy that. So it's probably going to be the most complex agenda slide that I think we've seen. So I'm going to cover the Windows XP image that you use, how you build that VHD, how you actually, what you put inside it, and what are the tool sets that you can use. We take that VHD, we then package it up in the MedV packager. It delivers what's effectively a MedV workspace. So I'm kind of going through the terminology here as well. That workspace today can be deployed through your organization using any enterprise software deployment tool. I will cover Config Manager today, but there are other alternatives. There are also other deployment means that you can use. So from an architectural perspective, MedV2 runs on Windows 7. If you like, it is a presentation layer that wraps around virtual PC. So the host itself can be a 32-bit or a 64-bit Windows 7 system. And we deploy to that the ESD agent, which you would have, say, the Config Manager agent, and it will have IE8 by default. You could have 9 or 10 if you please. Virtual PC is a prerequisite that's on the host, which is effectively the execution environment for the virtual machine. We then use the distribution mechanism and deploy out those major components. We put in a shim into the web browser, which allows us to intercept URLs. We have the host agent, which runs and hosts the workspace. And we deploy a parent disk, so the VHD that you package is what gets deployed out to the host. The differencing disk is built in one of two ways. Either you have one disk for every user on the system, or you have multiple disks. One disk for every user, or one disk that all users can use. But it is a differencing mechanism. The guest, once started, effectively has an ESD agent within it, so you can deploy software to the guest itself. It has IE6, because that's typically the deployment blocker, and it has a guest agent which manages the communication. When an app is deployed to that guest, it is automatically published, and typically you would only put your incompatible apps into this system. So where does MedV fit into a Windows 7 deployment? Your line of business applications that may be tied to IE6, or that may have a life cycle that prevents them from being installed on Windows 7 or functioning correctly. That application, once inside the guest, is published automatically to the host. So effectively, you'd see it in the start menu. It would look just like another app, and the user can launch it. The only way that the user can tell that it isn't running natively on the host is that it has a window that looks like it came from Windows XP, which is indeed the case. So to kind of put this in a slightly different context, it's effectively a local execution of terminal services. That's what we're doing. We're running XP as the terminal services server, if you like, and we're presenting into the host. So the objectives today, I want to describe what the differences between MEDV1 and V2 are, and we'll touch a bit on XP mode as well. We'll look at the processes to engineer a V2 solution, and so it's going to get technical, looking at the toolset that we'll use, and describes the basics of how it's deployed via something like Config Manager. You could adapt that to other ESDs, but I'll touch on Config Manager today. What I'd like you to take away from this session is that MEDV2 scales along with your electronic software distribution system. That's it. There's no server infrastructure required. The scalable deployment and management, so we leverage your deployment, your management capability today. If you use group policy and you have other tools in your environment that manage your systems, it's exactly what we leverage for V2. The key part here is that MEDV2 presents another operating system. It is just another desktop. It's just that the user doesn't actually see it. So V1, like I said, it had a client-server architecture. There was limited scalability because you did have to have that server basis to be able to create, manage, and deploy the workspace. And that posed a significant challenge for a lot of customers. There was no need to really stand up yet another piece of infrastructure just for a small subset of applications. V2, we had to rethink, and we now view the workspace as just another piece of software. So you can just deploy that to your organization and manage it with your existing tools. The scalability, it's unlimited because it really has local execution, uses local resources, and you deploy it in a way that suits your business. So it is just another application. It's just that you need to consider that it is also another desktop in your environment. So XP mode, the workgroup edition, if you like. We don't recommend that any large organization use XP mode. Anything more than about 25 to 50 users, and it becomes very cumbersome to manage. There is no management tool set around XP mode. I'm not really going to go through that entire feature set. It's relatively comprehensive. But XP mode pretty much covers just the first three. Doesn't really allow you to treat it as an enterprise application. V1 extended that as Kidaro and provided, I guess, more browser-based redirection and compatibility issues and so helped to solve those. But we had some significant gaps. So I guess the product team had a rethink, and V2 addresses all of those. It doesn't look like a terribly large increase in feature set, but they're really important. And it makes it much easier to be able to support incompatible applications. So those seven features is what MEDV2 brings to the table today. So from the host, what do we actually need? So we run on Windows 7 Professional, Enterprise, or Ultimate, and of course a 32 or a 64-bit platform. So really, that's the prerequisites to be able to run virtual PC, Windows virtual PC, and to be able to support the works, host agent. We do have a minimum requirement of 2 gig of RAM, and that's really around coupling the minimum requirements to run Windows 7 and to be able to run Windows XP with relatively minimal performance impact to the end user. The 10 gig of space that we recommend, a vanilla installation of XP Service Pack 3 is about 950 meg. Depending on how you build that image, it will obviously increase. Once you start to patch the system, the disk utilization increases. Once you start to get beyond 10 gig, it becomes very unwieldy to manage. So we recommend a minimum of 10 gig, but your requirements obviously fit into that to determine how large, but it also restricts how you can distribute the system. Windows Virtual PC, like I mentioned, is the Type 2 hypervisor that we use. And if you're running Windows 7 RTM, you do require that particular hotfix. That removes our reliance on the hardware-assisted virtualization, so you can run this on a system that does not actually have HAV in the chipset. That hotfix is included in Service Pack 1, so you don't need to deploy it. And of course, the host, IE 8 or 9, now we've got 10 in its preview mode, and of course, the guest can have IE 6 or 7. Most organizations tend to deploy it with 6, because that is what their apps are tied to. So from a workflow perspective, like I touched on earlier on, the administrator basically creates a virtual machine image. It's like you do today for even your desktop. So I think that's the framework, the reference that you need to maintain is that you're building an image for another desktop. We only support creating that image with Windows Virtual PC because of some of the requirements, sorry, the software requirements that we have. It's the only Type 2 hypervisor that allows us to do the publishing directly into the host. The admin then, as part of this image creation, installs applications that are required, installs any of the management and security applications, and seals the image with SysPrep. So effectively, you have built a new image for a virtual platform. The guest has some very specific requirements as well. We support Windows XP Service Pack 3 or later. So we recommend all your security patches get deployed. The virtual PC integration components is a key part of this. It allows us to integrate with the guest, with the host, and to do the auto-publishing. This is the reason that we only support virtual PC as the Type 2 hypervisor. There's a few other, software requirements. One of the most important ones there is the performance update. Windows XP does not really perform very well in a remote presentation configuration out of the box. So that hotfix does improve the performance over RDS significantly. The management and security apps, maybe even your line of business applications, should be considered for what you put into the image. It is another desktop that you're putting out there, so you need to build this image to be as reusable as possible. At the end of the day, who are your users that are going to have this, and what are their requirements? You may want to not put line of business applications into this image. You may want to deploy them at runtime or at use when the user requires them. Some of the best practices around creating that image, we don't really recommend that you take the XP image that you have today, put in the software requirements, and bundle that up within MedV. You should assess it for resourcefulness. At the end of the day, you have a piece of hardware that has limited resources. So if you have an XP image that has a very large resource footprint today, it's just going to impact the user twice. Windows 7 will have the user will have a poor host experience and a poor guest experience. So understanding how resourceful your, what the resource profile of your current image is pretty critical to this. The way I like to think about MedV is that it is a usability engine. It allows the publishing of applications in a seamless manner to a user on a different operating system. So the user's not going to see the desktop. They're not going to see the start menu in this system, so don't invest time in customizing those things. Okay, it's a very specific configuration that allows a single app to be published at a time. Emptying the recycle bin and the restore points is something we recommend to try and minimize the disk utilization for the virtual hard disk. The MedV workspace packager, and when we go through the demo, I'll show that, it actually does a compact on the VHD anyway. But it's good practice to try and compact and defrag that VHD before you capture it. When deploying this, the OS has to come up. It has to go through the mini setup and configure itself for your environments. We have three rather large areas that we kind of consider within this. These blue areas are required. If they're not in the SysPrep file, the first time setup will fail. So a couple of these things that we go through is we have one auto logon process. By default, there's a 999 put in, and we try and avoid that. We need to customize this. The domain admin and the domain admin password for joining the domain, you do need to provide that. And right down the bottom, you'll see that we're calling an executable, ftscompletion.exe. That effectively is the MedV customization of the workspace to ensure that it is prepared to be able to launch applications for the way the user needs it. We then have some optional components that are configured as you are preparing the workspace. When we go through the workspace packager, I'll show you where these are configured. But these are really more around the branding and run and mini setup configuration. So where in Active Directory do you want this computer account to reside? And what are the language and regional settings that you'd like to use? Some best practice components, like I mentioned earlier on, we like to disable the system restore points. The reset CM client is about removing the certificate for the Config Manager client so that when you use the ESD tool, it can register as a new client to your management infrastructure. And in some instances, you may want to customize a roaming profile. So you can do that as well through a customized reg file. So let's have a quick look at how we create this image. Okay, so the tool of choice for most of us is the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. As much automation is good, getting fingers out of the process is even better. So what we have here, just as a quick overview, is that we have a deployment share on the system. It is configured to have applications, so source applications that we want to install in our image. It has, in this instance, the Windows XP source files, and we use what's called a task sequence. So a task sequence is effectively a definition of a workflow that has very specific steps that need to be executed to be able to create an image and capture it. So like I mentioned, for MedV, if you like, we can have a look at this. And what you'll see is we're effectively installing the .NET Framework 3.5 with Service Pack 1. We have some configuration items around managing that within the toolkit. Some good guidance on this is that the application installation should never restart the system. You should always do it as a controlled process through the deployment toolkit. So through this process, we're effectively saying, these are the applications that we would like to install. Now, this is just the repository of the apps. The actual process of installing them is managed through the task sequence. So if we look at the task sequence, there's actually quite a few things that are going on here. The deployment toolkit has some templates. So this is a standard client deployment task sequence, I beg your pardon, a build and capture. What I've done to this is to customize it for MedV. So if you look through this area here, I install the updates. I installed some applications that are required, and I class these as applications. They may not be in your case. The two that I will call out is the block IE7 and block IE8. They're basically registry settings that prevent the system from auto-updating when it is on your network to then install IE7 or IE8 in this environment, given that in most instances you do want IE6 to persist. Like I mentioned earlier on, you want to make this image as generic and as small as possible. So what we recommend is to install the AppV client within the image. That allows you to stream applications directly to this system depending on the user or where the computer resides within Active Directory or by group membership. Forefront endpoint, we deploy that as part of the desktop. The perimeter is that desktop. It is another desktop, so let's protect it as such. With FEP 2010, Service Pack 1, we introduced the ability to actually store your signatures outside the image. So you can specify a file share and have the system pull signatures from a file share whenever it needs to update. That reduces the load on having additional systems use your software update mechanism or potentially go out to the internet. The MedV specific components, so we install the integration components for virtual PC and the MedV guest service. That effectively brokers the relationship between the host and the guest. One of the other components here, like I mentioned, is the sysprep file. This can be customized directly through the UI as well. So we've got these components in here to allow us to disable the system restore points and to execute the first time completion. We also have down here the ability to join our domain. Now, what you'll notice is that this is an XP system. It needs to be managed through group policy in a different way to Windows 7. So we recommend that you put it into its own OU. It also allows you to have an accounting mechanism for the number of MedV instances, MedV workspaces that you have within your environment. So once we have this up and running, what does this really mean? The deployment toolkit builds an ISO image. That's a boot time environment. And what it allows us to do is effectively run through a scenario where there is no need for you to really have your fingers involved in this process. I've allowed this to break and prompt so that you can confirm some of the process, but what it really is about specifying parameters so that the wizard has all the information to be able to build this image. We'll come back to this in a little while. Okay. So once you have the image, you then need to package it up. And we use the workspace packager, which is part of the MedV source files that you'd get in the m.pack. So MedV is part of the desktop optimization pack, which is licensed separately through Software Assurance and is available to most enterprise agreement customers. The packager process basically builds out, it compresses the VHD like I mentioned. It develops a set of reg files based on configuration parameters that you specify and some PowerShell and a PowerShell script, which allows you to deploy and sustain that image once it's in, once it's out in the ecosystem. So I'll just go back to this here. So what you'll see is the task sequence that we specified is shown. That's the only task sequence I have made available to this system. It's now connecting back to our deployment share and being, and it's pulling these configuration parameters out of a configuration file, if you like. So we don't really care about any of the regional settings. We don't care about the computer name because what we're really doing is building a reference image. One of the key parts here is being able to capture that image. Some customers choose to deploy this to a VHD and shut the system down, and they use that VHD. What I tend to do is to recommend that you capture it into a WIM. The WIM is basically a file-based image of your hard disk. You can then mount that and modify it later on as required. You can update the sysprep file before you package it through the workspace packager. So it gives you a bit more flexibility. That WIM, once captured, then needs to actually be deployed, be applied to a VHD. And what I've done is I've broken this out into a separate structure that tends to be fairly flexible in the way it's used. So what we have here is a set of folders that have a toolset, which is basically a set of scripts, and the ImageX tool, which allows you to be able to read a WIM file and be able to apply it and manipulate it. The source VHD, now when you're running this, you tend to run it on Windows 7. One of the changes that we made in Vista was the way the disk alignment is done during the disk part process. So you'll find that if you run disk part natively on Windows 7 or Vista, it will partition the disk and it will become unbootable for Windows XP. And there is a workaround for that, which we've published, which is a, basically a set of registry changes and allows you to partition the disk. So what I tend to recommend is create a template file, create a VHD that is an XP bootable VHD, and you can just use that. So that's what the part one and the part two is. They're just two templates, empty VHDs. We've got our source WIM. In this instance, I've prepared one earlier, and we have a workspace, which will be the output. So what we effectively do is, as part of this script, we create a copy of the VHD. We then use disk part to mount that within Windows 7. This is only available in Windows 7. And the reason we're using the client OS is that the MedV workspace does not actually run on Server 2008. So you need to do all of this on a Windows 7 system. 32 or 64-bit doesn't really matter. So we mount that VHD. We then apply the WIM to it. We detach the VHD, and we just move it aside so that we can use it later on. So what does that actually look like? Probably just kick this off here. That will take a little while to make a copy of the disk. Once you have the VHD, you then use the MedV workspace packager. The interface is relatively clean, and we've intended it that way to ensure that all the information you need to be able to build a MedV solution is right in front of you. So we can create a workspace package, which is something we'll go through. We can manage web redirection. So as you start to go through the process of remediating your applications or remediating your websites, you either want to remove them or you may find other ones that you want to add to it. That's what the web redirection component does. The settings will change how the workspace interacts with the user or how the user interacts with it, depending on the point of view. We've also got some information up on the right-hand side there for resources relating to MedV. So that will go ahead. So the workspace packager effectively allows you to customize the way the workspace will start up and the way it will operate once it's deployed. So in this instance, we're just going to call it the Windows XP compatibility workspace, and it's going to be deployed to that location there. Oops, let's go back. We then specify the VHD that we actually want to use for this process. And what we have here is MedV VHD. You'll notice there's a complete VHD. So it's actually gone through the process and created a VHD for us. So you'll notice here that the script's actually run through. It's mounted the WIM. Sorry, it's mounted the VHD. It's applied it. It's dismounted it and copied it aside. So we have a usable VHD right now. So we'll attach that. The first time setup customization, this is effectively when the system comes up, how do you want MedV to respond? How do you want the workspace to respond to the user? The unattended setup without any notification effectively starts it up as a silent application in the background. The user doesn't really notice anything. They may see a little bit of sluggish performance initially because there is a bit of disk I/O, but the workspace sets itself up in the background. We recommend an unattended setup, but we notify the user. That basically pops up a dialogue at the bottom right of the screen that says the workspace is starting in. Typically, it's 5 minutes, and the user has the option of postponing it or actually starting it up at, immediately. The attended setup we recommend for testing. So when you're building these workspaces, if you run the attended setup, it basically pops up a virtual PC interface, and you can watch what's going on through the mini setup process. For the way the workspace is installed, as I mentioned earlier, we install a parent disk and then create differencing disks for it. You can create a unique workspace for each user, so they will effectively have their own PC. So if you have a kiosk-style machine that, let's say, 10 people log onto, that's 10 PCs you're going to create. Alternatively, you can create one workspace that all users share, and that's about the best analogy is to have 10 people log onto the same machine. They can't do it at the same time. They will do it serially. In that way, you only manage one machine in your infrastructure. The administrator's group membership is managed. Typically, we let you manage that through your group policy. You have processes already. Alternatively, you can have MedV add users to the administrator's group as users log on to the system. Okay, we give you the opportunity to be able to customize messages that are presented to the user during the setup, as well as during any error messages, and provide a portal or a link for any support. So this is the part that actually becomes a bit more interesting, is how do you want this machine named? You can let Sysprep do it if you have some kind of process within your organization already. But typically, if you use a standard naming convention that you have today, then how do you actually distinguish a MedV system in your environment? So what we offer within MedV is the ability to build out the name in a specified way. You can prefix it with MedV. You can use part of the host name. You can use part of the username. And you can put them together to form what is effectively a unique name for that virtual machine. Some of it is limited insofar as it will truncate usernames. It may truncate host names. But what you end up with at the end of it is a unique name. So if Bob, for instance, logs onto three PCs, he will get three machine names that may have his user ID in them, but it could be different because he's logged onto different hosts. So we'll go through and use 6 characters of the username. It gives you a preview down the bottom around here, so that's what the workstation name would be. Typically, users want to have a consistent experience. So if you have a particular set of regional settings or profile configurations, you want that to persist between the guest and the host. And we allow the system to copy regional settings from the host directly into the guest during the mini setup process. We allow it to copy some of the user's settings as well, and the domain name. So typically, you may want this machine to be a member of the same domain that the host is. We'll copy that across. Our recommendation around this is to put all these MedV systems into a similar place within Active Directory. So if you have a single OU, put them all into a MedV OU, if you like, and that That will allow you to manage, inventory, and account for these virtual machines. So we'll copy these. The way the MedV workspace starts up, like I mentioned earlier on, is when do you want it to start up? If you let users manage it, they will basically start it up when they need it. That has, of course, the downside that the system is never really ready for the user to use their application. They do need to go through the process of starting up the machine. It then comes out of hibernation, and then they're able to use it. We recommend that you start it when the user logs on. So there's an initial performance hit from a disk I/O perspective, but then the system's up and running. And I'll show you what that looks like. Alternatively, you can start MedV at first use. And what that means is we publish the applications into the user's start menu. When they start that application, we then start the virtual machine, and then they get access to the application. And that could be a significant delay, depending on how resourceful the MedV image is. Networking was an area that we kind of had to invest in, because what we found was one of the prohibitions to it is that some customers don't have enough IP addresses in their environment. So NAT is a pretty good option to be able to minimize the impact on your network from an IP address space perspective. However, with Config Manager, for instance, in Service Pack 2 and earlier, we didn't actually support managing a device behind a network address translation interface. Now we do. There is a hotfix for those of you that are running Config Manager Service Pack 2. If you have Service Pack 3, it's built in. So you can either share that device through NAT, or you can bridge it directly onto your network, depending on what your requirements are. Given that you have an ESD agent in this image, you can track, you can audit, do you really need to bridge it onto the IP, do you really need to bridge it onto your network? Just a consideration, typically security teams will ask that it be bridged onto the network so they can trace. Do you really need to do that, given that you have an ESD agent that is able to inventory and control how that system behaves? You can still do log shipping. You can still manage that device because it is part of your domain. The credential piece was new in MedV2. We can now store credentials. So when the workspace starts up for the first time, we prompt the user for their credentials, and away we go. We store those, and we pass those through each time the workspace starts up. If the user's password does change, we just prompt the user again. So this is where we really start to get into managing how we do this. How do we manage the URLs that need to be managed by IE6 and by the guest? What you can do in one of two ways: you can either type your addresses in. So I would go with demo.com and so forth. You can import it from a text file if you like, and that gets configured in the workspace. So these are available by default when the workspace starts up for the first time. The internet security zone, when it's set to high, we treat everything as insecure. IE6 is now a relatively insecure browser, and so we'd like to try and lock it down as much as possible. You may want to evaluate this against your applications and how they function. The last piece there is the browsing capability. By default, we disable the UI, so the user can't actually use IE6 as a generic browser once it's started. It will only be used through the host browser, and they will be intercepted and then passed through directly to IE6. So at this point, we get a summary of the components that we've configured, and we go create. Now, this will take maybe about 10 to 15 minutes on a physical machine. This is a virtual machine that's running out here, so that may take a little while. But effectively, what this will do now is it will create a VHD that has a .medv extension. That's a compacted and compressed VHD that has also been modified by the workspace packager. The reg file that it creates, it has taken all the settings that we have passed through the configuration steps, puts it into a reg file, and packages it up for installation into the host. We also generate a PowerShell script, which allows you to use that registry file and pass it back into the system. So when you need to update the URLs, if you need to update the way the workspace is available to the user, the PowerShell script will do it. So there's an entire PowerShell module that is installed that you can import and then script through. Okay. You could manage it through group policy, but what we do is we do redirection at the host level. If you choose to do that via group policy, that's also okay. It basically takes the URLs, it converts it into a hex format, and then passes it through. So you can do that redirection through group policy. I suspect it will be an unmanaged group policy, though, because I don't think we provide that natively within the default set of templates. Yeah. Okay. So we've been through taking the VHD, packaging it up, and having it available. The output of the workspace packager is effectively a setup file, an MSI file, a PowerShell script, and a reg file, and the VHD, or the MedV disk. Once that's packaged, that's effectively an application. So deploy it as you please. So we've just been through the workspace demo. Here's some considerations around MedV on a shared computer. Like I mentioned, there are two options. You can either have one workspace per user or one workspace for all users. If you want a unique workspace, that's effectively one PC, one MedV workspace per user, one PC per user, and therefore more objects in Active Directory, more management overhead for the organization. Additionally, this consumes more disk space because you do need to create an entire differencing disk that is a new PC. You do want to really think about this option if you want one workspace per user. The other scenario is that one workspace that all users share. If you like, today, multiple users log onto an XP workstation, and that's quite an acceptable configuration. So there really isn't a security downside to this, because it is just multiple users logging onto the same machine. They will have a separate profile. They will be managed as individuals. So the web direction is predominantly what MedV is used for. What we do is we install a shim effectively into the host browser, and we intercept the configured URLs, and we pass them directly through to the guest. And I'll show you how that works in a demo in a little while. The URLs must match exactly. So for instance, I configured www.medvdemo.com. That will redirect. If I typed in medvdemo.com, it will not redirect. So you need to be very explicit in the way you configure your URLs. Like I mentioned, we've done an initial configuration. You can then specify this subsequently and deploy that as a software package using your ESD. So some of the examples, you can do a wildcard redirection for an entire domain if you choose. You can redirect a single site. You can redirect a single page or a single web application. And the last one is to actually redirect to a particular port. We support all of these, and you can pass them through seamlessly. The only observation that a user can make is that they will notice that it's IE6 and it has a blue XP border. So how do we actually get this out there? Like I mentioned, it is just a standard application. It has a setup file, it has a silent setup, but it has some prerequisites as well. Okay. So you have three options, like you do with any application. You can install it manually. You can include it in your image and deploy it. And I'll cover that in a bit, but that's not really about installing it. It's about pre-staging the content within the image, because what we're talking about is potentially multiple gigabytes of data here. Finally, you can deploy it via an electronic software distribution system. So the manual installation option, some kind of sneaker net, some kind of removable media that your technicians will use. We actually do have customers that do this for security requirements, but it's really really an inefficient way of doing this. You effectively need to have all the prerequisites on the media to be able to install it. So you need virtual PC. For Windows 7 RTM, you need the non-HAV patch. You need the MedV host agent. Internet Explorer, of course, shouldn't be running, so it could be disruptive to the user. And then you need the workspace package to be installed. So this really is about a desk-side installation. If you do it through an image, what we recommend is that when you create your Windows 7 image, you stage the source files for the workspace within that image, and you trigger the installation via your software distribution mechanism. That allows you a bit more flexibility to control at what point you want to do the installation, who you want to do the installation for, but it minimizes the impact on your network. You're not transferring multiple gigabytes at any point in time. Of course, it's the same process. You still need the same prerequisites. You need to go through the same process. And the ESD is only used to launch the installation of the workspace. The ESD component gives you, of course, the most flexibility, because what you can then do is install each component at different times. You can pre-stage virtual PC, for instance, within your image, and that removes one of the software prerequisites. You can then use the ESD as part of your management system as well. And like I mentioned earlier on, Config Manager SP2 or earlier did not support managing the device through a NAT. Whereas with the hotfix, which is included as one of the references in this deck, does allow that, or you go to SP3, which has the update built in. What we recommend in this instance is to actually pre-stage the Config Manager client within the image, delete the certificate, and have it reach out to your Config Manager infrastructure. So via ESD, there's an interesting order that we've come up with, which is to actually reverse the way the installation is done. When the product team was developing the product, one thing they did notice was that there was a significant impact to the user. It was disruptive to the user insofar as there were multiple reboots that were required. So what they did was they built in some prereq checks, or rather, they built in the ability to ignore prerequisite checks. You'll notice that what we do here is we install the MedV host agent. We then install the workspace. We then install virtual PC. And virtual PC is the part that really requires that reboot. So we delay the reboot as much as we can, and we do it once. Once that system boots, the workspace is available for any user that logs onto the system. You'll also notice that there's a no restart option specified there, and I'll come to that in when we look at how we do this via an ESD. So, of course, the inverted order. When you're deploying it with Config Manager, it also allows you to target who you're deploying it to. Now, I did mention we've got multiple gigabytes of data that we need to transfer here. Config Manager is a bit smarter. It uses bits and transfers that image over time. So you do need to have a deployment plan to be able to deploy that effectively from a T-minus 20 days, T-minus 10 days, depending on what your network utilization is like. But you can then build collections based on business need. So only a particular business unit can have the MedV workspace. There may be logistical components, like I mentioned, specifically relating to your network. Sorry, yep. Beg your pardon? Yep. So the question was whether changing the MedV package will use binary differential replication. That's Config Manager. So if you change it and you update the package, Config Manager will replicate it as required using its replication system. Yeah. If it is file-based, so the the VHD is a single file, I think we would transfer it at a block level. So BDR will apply. Of course, you may want to deploy by operating system version, so you don't want the workspace to attempt to install on a server. You don't want it to install on Windows XP. And of course, you may want to inventory your environment for disk utilization. If you have systems that do have low disk, you definitely don't want to be deploying MedV to these systems. So what we recommend is that you use a task sequence. Given that we have multiple components that need to be installed, we recommend you use a software task sequence to be able to ensure that the components install in a defined order, that you can evaluate the success of those installations, and you can control the reboot system as well. So, like I mentioned, we recommend that you put the Config Manager client into the MedV workspace. So when that system comes up, it reaches out and reaches back to your Config Manager infrastructure, specifically because we do recommend that you deploy it with a NAT configuration. When staging the client in the image, we recommend that you remove certificates, which allows it to come up as a new client when it contacts the CM infrastructure. Spoken about the hotfix. You do need to apply it to your site servers. So effectively, your hierarchy needs to be at the SP, sorry, the hotfix needs to be applied to all your site servers or your at service pack 3. The NAT configuration also gives you the flexibility of being able to reduce the footprint on your network. One of the things that I think I mentioned earlier, that customers do not want to increase their IP usage, they want to try and shrink that down. So netting is certainly the preferred option. So let's look at how we deploy Medv with Config Manager. We do have an option of running it from the distribution point. We can pull it down, we can pull the content down locally, but of course you then need to effectively have twice the amount of disk space. You need to have the workspace staged locally, the installation source. You then need to install it before that installation source can be removed. Typically that will persist in your Config Manager cache until it is pushed out. Like I mentioned, from an application perspective, we'd recommend AppV within the image so that you stream applications that are required. That allows you to be able to make your image as generic as possible so that you can utilize it within multiple business areas if you choose to deploy by business unit. It may use some extra disk space, but that's the downside of having the line of business applications deployed to this environment. You have to use the disk somewhere. I also mentioned with the Forefront, you can store the signature files outside the environment so that it reaches out to a file share. FEP 2012 by default allows you to do that, and it also allows you to configure the first time setup so that when the system comes up for the first time, the Forefront client can reach out, I think it's within about 15 minutes, to be able to grab that update, the updated signature. So when you're deploying with Config Manager, we do recommend, of course, like you do with a software installation, you'd create a package, you'd create task sequences, and you'd advertise that to the appropriate collections. The run command line, I've specified them in a previous slide. They all need to be consistent, they need to be quiet so that the user is not interrupted, and they need to not reboot the system. The task sequence should control that reboot. And of course, handle your error codes. Error handling, I think, is relatively poorly done in some scripts. Most customers tend to focus on the logic and not necessarily the error handling, and the error handling is just a poor user experience at the end of the day if it's not done correctly. From a 32-bit and 64-bit perspective, you do need to cater for it. I would recommend, and I'll demonstrate that in a bit, that typically we have one task sequence, which will, and the tasks can evaluate whether they're running on a 32-bit platform or a 64-bit platform. And they will either install or just skip over. So from a task sequence perspective, this is what it looks like. I'll demonstrate one that that I've set up. Effectively, it's advertised to the user. The user tries to run it. It installs the workspace. Once complete, it will prompt the user for a reboot as required. When the user logs on for the first time, this is what they see. Basically, they get a 5-minute countdown based on the default configuration of the workspace package. The user can either choose to postpone it, or they can start the workspace immediately. And this is really to give the user some degree of flexibility for the tasks that they have at hand. I guess the case in point is a user wants to get onto their system really quickly to check their mail because they need to find an appointment that they need to get to. They don't necessarily need to have their workspace start up immediately. So when the first time setup actually executes, what actually happens? We take a whole host of the configurations that we specified in the workspace and we publish that using the Medv host process. And that usually publishes it into the run key of the host. So whenever the user logs onto that system, the workspace starts up. The first time setup has to be evaluated every time. It is likely that if the differencing disk, for instance, has been deleted within the user's profile, we need to recreate it. We need to go through that process and start setting up the workspace again. If there was a failure on the last setup, we evaluate it and we execute the first time setup again. So when that first time setup executes, what effectively happens is that the user is prompted for their domain credentials. They can choose to save it or not, and you typically want to save your credentials for the lifespan of your password. Your password expiry period. That allows a more seamless experience every time the user starts an app. They don't have to put in their passwords. Security requirements may dictate otherwise, and we allow you that flexibility to not store credentials during the packaging of the workspace. The mini setup that we specified in the or the setting, the parameters that we specified in the sysprep file can be used, but when we package, the workspace actually dynamically changes that sysprep file as required, and it puts in the customizations required and the scripts that need to run to be able to make that mini setup successful as far as first-time setup is concerned. The workspace is, of course, started, and the applications are published to the user's start menu. At that point, the user, if they want to go off to a URL, will start up the host internet browser. They will type in their URL, and it will automatically redirect out to the specified, automatically redirect out to the guest. So let's have a look at what a deployment looks like. Okay, so what we have here is a standard user logged into the system, and the task sequence has been advertised to this user. Now, you may choose to make it mandatory that this executes independently of a user being able to invoke it. I've done this more for demonstration purposes. So the user effectively runs that, and there it goes. So it starts to download from the distribution point and executes the setup. Like I went through on the screenshots, that's exactly what happens. This will take a little while, so we'll probably just leave that, and we'll head on through the rest of the slides. The task sequence, like I mentioned, should be configured to handle error codes, and it has the ability to be configured to look at the platform, the OS, and any other WMI parameters that you can draw from the host operating system. So how do we update MedV policy? Like I mentioned, within the packager, there are two options. You can change policy and you can change the redirection URLs that you have. Effectively, they create a reg file. You can do it through one of two ways. You can either deploy that reg file through your ESD, or you can use the PowerShell module that is included as part of the installation of the host agent to be able to execute that. If you deploy that reg file as with the user rights, the redirection, the configuration will apply only for that user. If you apply it with admin rights, it will go to the entire system and all users will be impacted by that change. This should be governed through change management, of course, and release management. But more importantly, and what we recommend is when you're thinking about MedV, the first decision you need to make is when does an application get out of MedV? So a line of business app will have its own life cycle. If we look at XP, we've got until, I think it's Feb 2014. I wouldn't recommend leaving it until Feb 2014 to get off MedV. To quote the product manager, it's one of the few products that Microsoft makes that we actually wish you don't use, right? We want people to be running their apps natively on the Windows 7 platform. And this is just one of those tools to be able to encourage deployment. So you do need to have some kind of corporate support, some kind of corporate policy to support you getting applications out of MedV. Entering MedV is easy. Getting out of it is typically very difficult. Business owners will tend to try and sustain their application lifecycle, and you do want to encourage them as best as possible to egress the environment. So patching MedV is perhaps one of the challenges that we had in version 1. Version 2 makes it a bit easier. It still isn't, I guess, perfect. The workspace only runs when the user is logged in. So if the user's not logged in, if you just reboot the system and no one's logged in, there's no workspace running, so there's really nothing to patch at that point. However, if we use fast start, which is the workspace starts as soon as the user logs in, your patch distribution system can effectively reach into that guest. It can patch the guest. The guest can reach out as well and try and pull updates. One thing that we do recommend around this is to use something like Config Manager and its software deployment capabilities in conjunction with maintenance windows. So if you define maintenance windows that exist during the business day and they're negotiated with the users and the business unit, effectively you have the ability to change the schedule. By default, it wakes at midnight and turns off at 4 a.m. So if a user's logged in, that's what the system will do. And then you can patch the system exactly as you would a regular desktop. That c- command line using the PowerShell commandlet will allow you to change the window that you will be waking the system up on, the guest on. So DCM is one of the other areas where we've done a bit of investment. First time, DCM is Desired Configuration Management. It is a component of Configuration Manager. It effectively allows you to specify a configuration baseline that defines success or failure. So we evaluate configuration items within a baseline, and we have one specifically for MedV. It evaluates the first time setup process. So what we can see through that is on what systems, on which systems, this first time setup has succeeded and on which it has failed. And we have a set of tools that allow you to then troubleshoot the failure. The SCAP for DCM is free. It's available off the DCM portal, so you can download that and install it directly into your Config Manager environment. Like I said, it is restricted to first-time setup. That is what's unique to MedV. Once the system's up and running, it's just a regular operating system on your network. So you manage it and monitor it like you do with any other device. Some installation instructions. Like I said, it's just an MSI. You run it on your primary site server and other site servers, and away you go. And it's available to you through the reporting mechanism. You do need to enable the DCM client and or the DCM agent. Once that's enabled, you define the period, the frequency with which you'd like to evaluate the first time setup. Now, typically, you deploy a workspace, and it would set up once per user if you choose to go down that path, or it will do it once on a system. We deploy this against the host. The evaluation is done against the host, and the host then reports success or failure of the FTS process. So what does a successful first-time setup look like? That's the list of it. It basically says we have configured the VHD. We've installed it. We've been able to inject the parameters into the sysprep file. The mini setup has run. We've been able to configure the host for redirection, and we've been able to successfully install or execute FTS completion, which basically flags that all setup processes have completed successfully. We also monitor to see that the workspace starts successfully. It is possible that we can go through the entire process, but while mini setup is running, we could fail because a sysprep file was incorrectly configured. And we'll flag that to the user through the UI, and we'll also report it back through to Config Manager. So I mentioned updating settings. Effectively, manage web redirection and manage settings allows you to go through and add or remove URLs. The way the list is managed is that it is a replace, so you do need to add your original URLs to this list. We then also allow you through the manage settings component to be able to reconfigure how the workspace behaves and how the system appears on your network. You get a reg file, you deploy the reg file through your ESD, and you've reconfigured MedV. So we've gone through to get great lengths to make sure that managing the MedV experience is more about managing an application. And that's really what we've succeeded in doing here. Every system that has the host agent has an admin toolkit on it as well. That is executed. That line's in the wrong place. You execute the MedV host agent with the slash toolkit option, and it brings up a different interface. So once you have through DCM and you've evaluated that FTS maybe has not been successful, the technician can then use this tool set to be able to evaluate why. It allows you to look at host events. MedV introduces a discrete event log specifically for MedV, and that's where you typically look on the host. We can also reach into the guest. Now, the toolset only works if first-time setup has actually completed successfully. If it hasn't, there's nothing for it to reach into. So this is more an operational tool that allows you to troubleshoot performance of the OS and other issues that you may face. There are two options here. Restart the MedV workspace and reset the MedV workspace. Restart effectively shuts down the virtual machine and restarts it in the background. Reset will delete the differencing disks. It will basically take it back to a fresh installation, and you'll need to go through first-time setup again. Now, that is, let's say that's the equivalent of, I need to rebuild my PC. And that's effectively what it does. So if you have an ESD, if you have AppV, for instance, installed in that image, it's a relatively painless experience to be able to get those applications done again. It also allows you here to look through published applications and redirected websites. So you can actually check what the configuration of that system is if it's new to you or if the technician isn't familiar with what the admins have specified. So just before we go through this, we'll have a look at what MedV actually looks like. Okay. Doesn't look very good. So here's a stock viewer application that's part of the application compatibility toolkit. It is designed to run in Windows XP and has some issues running in Windows 7. So this is the local version of the app. You'll notice that, of course, you need to be an admin to run. And then it starts up. So it looks like it's functional, but as soon as the user starts to go through some use cases, it will fail. So for instance, this one requires IE6 explicitly. There's not really much we can do about it within Windows 7. But with MedV, what it allows us to do is to do a redirection. You'll notice down here, we're running the host agent. The user settings we've specified through chat. Okay. All right, so the settings that we've specified have been managed through our workspace configuration, and effectively at this point the user is unable to change any of those settings. Might just see if I can get that application down here. So when you try and launch, click the browse option, it effectively tells you that you need IE6. And that's how it behaves under Windows 7. It also does this under Windows Vista. What we do through MedV is we then publish that application. There it is. So you'll notice that there are still some issues with the application. It does have an error message. It does still detect that there's some .NET runtime errors. The base image has been configured without most of the prerequisites for the application. And when we start it up, what we end up getting is the app that runs. Now, the browse option effectively starts up XP, I beg your pardon, IE6. So all of that is running within the virtual machine and is just being presented directly to the user without actually seeing the desktop. So that experience is effectively managed through all of the work that we've been through the session. It's published into the start menu. You can then take those shortcuts and publish them separately. What some customers tend to do is when they use AppV is they use something like GPP, Group Policy Preferences, and publish the shortcuts to other locations so that it's not just in the start menu. It may be on the user's desktop or they may pin it to the taskbar. Within, from a user experience perspective, if I needed to go to the MedV demo site, what the user sees is a notification that tells them we're opening it in a different version of the browser. And what you'll see up here is we effectively have IE6. So the redirection has occurred seamlessly. The user hasn't really had to start up IE6. They haven't had to worry about it, but we've notified them. The reason we notify is that if the user or if the admin considers that they want to use a delayed start, they want start the workspace on first use, there's a delay. So we pop it up to the user to say, we're actually trying to start this up in an earlier version. The user is notified that there could be a delay. And that's really the user experience for MedV. It is effective. It's relatively seamless. But the user will notice it in that the user interface for the application they're launching does use the XP windowing system. So just to review the session, MedV V1 and V2, most of you aren't using V1, so that's probably a really good thing. Go straight to V2. It's just an application. The process that I've described here is relatively seamless. We use that tool set to be able to build and deploy Windows 7 on a regular basis. It's a pretty solid tool set. I'd recommend you have a look at it. Down here, I've got some disks, the desktop proof of concept. It's the version 2. That basically is two DVDs that contains a single virtual machine. The virtual machine that I've used to build this environment is on those disks. So it's effectively a domain controller. It has Config Manager. It has SQL. It has the deployment toolkit. It has the app compare toolkit and a whole swathe of other tools. It also has some guidance around deployment. So if you're in the middle of a Windows 7 deployment, consider the content that's on those disks. What it doesn't have is MedV. MedV is available through Software Assurance. So if you have an enterprise agreement, you should be able to download the MDOP toolset and install it into this environment. So what you're seeing here is effectively that set of disks. That's exactly what I did. So you should be able to leverage that and ramp up to get a MedV deployment, but more specifically to start a Windows 7 deployment. There are also some posters down here for Office 2010 from a deployment perspective. It does give you some deployment options. It's just a wall chart. You can get a PDF version of it if you like, but there's a few of them up here as well, so help yourselves. I hope that's been useful. It was intended to be technical to ensure that we try and convey best practice to engineer the solution. I explicitly steered away from requirements because that's an entirely different session, and I think we need to go through that process separately. So thank you very much for your time. We seem to be on time. And so I hope that you have a good evening, and thank you for attending. Don't forget to fill out your evals. All right. And I'll take any questions you may have.